For another week on Inside Motorsport, Carl Lynn Ford, suffering from what I had last weekend. I hope I wasn't the cause of it, but we send our best wishes out to him. Now, also with us this week, Penn Norton will be joining us very soon as we look at kart, we look at speedway, NASCAR, American racing, with a very interesting interview from our good friend in Chris Economaki, of course. Certainly the godfather of motorsport over in the United States. We will take a look at drag racing. Drag racing fans, we certainly hope we can keep you on board there. But we will start with a racing in Australia. And Victoria's Max Dunsney started the Northern Terrace Tyre Sprint Car Action Series on a winning note when he convincingly won the 15th annual Sprint Car Masters in front of a large crowd at Speedway City in Adelaide. Dunsney captured his third A-grade feature race victory of the season after already winning twice in four starts from Parramatta City Raceway in New South Wales. The race was all over on the first turn when Dunsney jumped for the lead past the pole sitter, the South Australian driver Mark Roeder, with Dunsney then seemingly cruising to a new 25-lap track record of 5:37.8, nearly 10 seconds better than the previous record held by South Australians Trevor Green. In drag racing news, well, we'll go to the IHRA first up, whilst Paul Romey records a top fuel pass, the fastest in IHRA history at Rockingham. Paul Romey made his fastest pass during Saturday's qualifying for the CarQuest Autumn Nationals at Rockingham in, well, North Carolina. He hails from Indianapolis and ran a 4.676 at 320.46 miles an hour, passing the mark already set at 319.47 that was set earlier in the season by Shirley Muldowney. Now, Ramon and Bruce Luton of Indianapolis and Clay Merkin of Tennessee are involved in the closest top fuel points battle in the IHRA history, and it is going to be decided at Rockingham. The eliminations are scheduled for noon tomorrow US time. But whilst we have got drag racing overseas, and of course the final of the NHRA, and I'll speak more about that in a few moments, is coming up very, very soon in Pomona, of course, the grand final in Pomona. We did have drag racing underway in Calder Park, and what a night of drag racing it was. It was the return of the 2000-2001 season at Calder Park, and it was headlined by the top four slammer bracket, which saw Queensland-based Castrol 57 Chevrolet driver Victor Bray set a new world record by reaching a terminal speed of 385 kilometres per hour during a qualifying run. Now, the stats, it was an ET of 6.401. It was an absolutely amazing run, which ended at 237.4 miles an hour. The hard-working Brett Stevens made it into both the top four slammer and the top bike finals after an incredible weekend that showcased the Queenslanders' remarkable skills. Stevens riding his Harley-Davidson lined up alongside fellow Brisbane Lakes Kawasaki rider Stephen Kitchen, and the two competing very close side-by-side battle. Well, it was Stevens who took his first victory of the night and nearly 0.4 of a second, and his 7.120 seconds eclipsing Kitchen's ET of 8.504 seconds. So we are looking forward to speaking very shortly to Paul Marinelli to get all the details of the night's racing, but You have enjoyed another week where on Friday, Peter Norton, it was announced that negotiations between HRT and Cobrands have broken down, thus leaving Lowndes as a free agent for 2001.
Yes, that's right, and what amazing timing to make this announcement with the biggest race of the year, Bathurst, just around the corner. So it really does make it interesting, puts more pressure on that HRT for that race, whether they can indeed keep their focus on the race at hand. And of course, Craig Lowndes, of course he's more professional than to have that double alliances or anything like that. He will be out there to win, and of course they're trying to get Mark Scaife to a victory and in the championship as well. So that will be interesting. Also, it now opens up a whole new range of where will he go. The couple of Ford seats are still available.
Well, Stone Brothers is a hot tip there, because close links with Craig and Natalie to the Stone Brothers and the operation being up in Queensland. In fact, here's a piece of useless information for him. Last week, Craig was fitting a Chevy to his Hilux or a Land Cruiser or whatever it is. A wasted effort, if I may say so, but he was doing it all the same.
What's the connection? Anyway, yeah, Stone Brothers, that was the first of the gossip many, many weeks ago. We had heard through the grapevine that he did sign with Stone Brothers. Of course, that then led to weeks and weeks of speculation. So that didn't turn out to be true, but like you said, that does seem to be the strong chance. Also, a seat that's open is for Tickford Racing. Neil Crompton moving on at the end of the year. Personally, I think it's unlikely that Glenn Seaton would take in someone who would be an equal number one, potentially pushing Glenn Seaton down to a number two. But with his practice crash at Phillip Island a couple of weeks ago, maybe he's reassessing his priorities. Who knows? It's just speculation at this point. Yes, it'll be interesting. At least HRT can now go ahead and start planning for next year and sign up someone else to fill that very coveted seat. That's, of course, one that everyone would love to jump into.
Yeah, and one that might be filled internationally, not just nationally, with some of the drivers that are available for racing. Now,
I'd have to question that one, though, because a few years back, when Greg Murphy was in that seat, there was some issues from a marketing point of view of having a New Zealander in the seat. It really does seem to be a golden seat for an Australian there.
But Mark Scaife is going to take the number one role automatically, because this is one of the problems that Craig Lowndes is having at the moment, because he is feeling as though Scaife is shoehorning himself above Craig. That's part of the, as well as the obvious marketing problems that HRT have created, but you know, that is one of the perceived problems from the Lowndes side.
Yeah, but the HRT have resources to put forward two equal cars, and I think that, for all intents and purposes, that's what they've done this year, and Scaife has just had more consistent results. Back to the marketing point of view, though, sorry, Mark, you're a little old, really, for the target audience.
All right. We might, do you have any, I feel like, have we got anything for Campaign 2000 or what?
Campaign 2000.
Oh, it's very...
You spent those weeks in the US.
Yeah,
I'm truly brainwashed with the campaign over there. We just won't mention any drink driving, will we?
No.
Not to suggest that you were drink driving. Of course, it was George W. Bush. No, Bush had a drink driving charge decades ago, and someone dragged that out.
I will go back to my drag racing.
Yes, please.
And last weekend at, I think I was in Houston actually, but I could be corrected. It was, I've got Texas Motorplex, which is not in Houston, but it is in fact in, where the hell is it? Texas Motorplex is in Dallas Fort Worth. So this, I am getting off the topic, but Corey McCutton, who's winless in the NHRA Winston National events this year, until he won last weekend at Houston, scored a second straight victory in the Top Fuel, defeating the first time Top Fuel finalist Melanie Troxel, T-R-O-X-E-L. Troxel?
Yeah, that's closer than the first guy.
Okay, Troxel, in the final round of the once postponed and often rain threatened 15th annual O'Reilly Fall Nationals, presented by Castrol Syntex at, of course, Texas Motorplex. In funny car, John Force continued his great late season career, taking victory number 91 over our rival Jerry Tolliver in the final. Kurt Johnson scored his 5th win of the season and his 20th of the career in pro stock, while Steve Johns scored his 2nd career pro stock truck title. And that is going to be an exciting finale. Talking about finales in the United States, the Pendera World of Outlaws was supposed to be concluded, and I'm supposed to be telling you that Steve Kinzer is the champion from San Swindle, Mark Kinzer. I can't do that just yet, though, because there was an unbelievable situation where rain in Las Vegas, which happens once every decade, washed out the track, made it unsafe. But in the rerun, which happened last night or early this morning our time, Sam Swindell was almost unstoppable in the preliminary feature, and he, the three-time series champion, won the 10th of Wednesday and was leading all 15 laps in the opening night of the Silver State Shootout at Las Vegas Motor Speedway, which is the dirt track at Las Vegas, owned by Britton Smith. The opening night race was postponed 24 hours due to unsafe track conditions. Now, Tony Stewart, the president of Tony Stewart Motorsport, and would he be anything else, announced that he will be fielding a full-time team in the Pendera World of Outlaws Sprint Car Series beginning in 2001 with a proven winner, Danny Lasowski. Of course, the dude will be the driver and general manager of the team. Stewart further announced that Indiana-based J.D. Byrd has teamed with TMS, Tony Stewart Motorsport, as the sponsor of the number 20 sprint car, with Ham America joining the effort as major associate sponsor. And I don't know what actually Ham America is.
Don't look at me, you were there the other week, you should know these things.
Okay, I should, but I don't. So Kinzer is at the top of the point standing, although Sam Swindell would have closed the gap because I've got standing through November 2 and the race, of course, was on November 3. Sam Swindell 2nd, Mark Kinzer 3rd, Daniel Lasowski 4th, and Steve Smith in 5th place. For Australian interest, it was Brooke Tatner back in 18th. Now, Brooke Tatner this year's career earning, or this year's racing earnings, not too shabby, $50,875. It isn't a bad living, mind you, we probably spent twice that to earn that.
It is US dollars, though.
So he's a millionaire, just about. Yeah, don't know whatever. He's also 18th in the... Oh, I must have copied the point standings. Let's not worry about that. Oh. And Peter, also last weekend, a wreck fest, which I know you talk about in more detail a little bit down the line, as the cart series wrapped up for another year. And it has been an interesting season. Jason Bright, really, if he doesn't get a ride, he will feel very hard done by, because he did everything right at the race up at the Honda Indy. He certainly impressed everyone who saw him drive there.
That's right. It's just a little unfortunate that the team that he drove for, the Delapana Motorsports, won't be filling a car at all next year. Let's hope that the Queensland government sponsorship of Bright for that one-off race over a couple of years, hopefully they didn't put money up front for next year and the year after, because the team is no longer.
Yes, but the silly season is in vogue over there. It was the Formula One silly season. It certainly is an interesting time in open wheel motor racing. And of course, the kart championship series last weekend at Pocono rained out and then had to go once again.
Throughout the year, they said the kart FedEx championship was the series that no one wanted to win. People stormed to the front only to get lost in the wilderness and to drop back to the middle of the pack in the championship hunt. Well, it was the same for the final race of the series at Fontana in California. It was a race that no one wanted to win. The race kicked off on Sunday. After 33 laps, the rain delay meant that it was finished on a Monday. And at the end of the day, only 5 people remained running. One of the more spectacular exits from the race was Paul Tracy, who was in the hunt for the championship. Although he did need a couple of minor miracles, he had exactly the opposite, with a tournament explosion that tore the back off the car and put him out of the race. We spoke to one of the Honda engineers to find out exactly what a plenum explosion was all about.
I think we had a plenum explosion that caused by excess fuel inside the plenum that ignite. We're not sure how to prevent it, but we do know the symptoms that lead up to it, where the driver is basically in and out of the throttle a lot, builds up excess fuel. It's very common even in road cars. You know, that situation that you're building up excess fuel. First time it's occurred in a race. We've had it in practice before, We thought we had it leaked, but evidently not.
And at the end of the day, it was Christian Fittipaldi who took out the race victory and claimed $1 million in prize money for this very prestigious race in the kart calendar. And here he told us what it felt like to be a winner of the 500-mile race.
Two very special weeks for me. Like, first, as you said, I'm getting married in the beginning of next year. And obviously, that's the most important thing in my life. And I couldn't really have a better day today. Like, to finish the championship, we had a very tough season. And to finish the year on a high like this, it's great. And then going into next season like this, it's even better.
And of course, it was a race of attrition, and here's what Christian had to say about the final couple of laps and wondering about how the car would perform going to the end.
I drove wide open. If you look at the telemetry of the car was perfect, and I was wide open. I didn't have one single lift, and the car was very good. The team gave me something excellent for me to play on the track, and I basically was very conservative until the last 50 laps of the race, because I knew it was going to come right to the very end.
Roberto Moreno took home a fine second place in the race to cap off an up and down year in the championship, and here's what he had to say about his second placing.
Thank you very much. It's a great day for the Eastern team. We didn't have a shot, we had a shot of probably winning this race, but we'll take second, very happy. We didn't have a winning car here, and we made it through the race, and we, at the beginning of the race, and we fixed it throughout. And the car was great at the end, and shame that Christian was playing like a little brake test on us every time he restarted.
Second place in the championship, of course, went to Adrian Fernandez, who earlier in the weekend announced that he'd be leaving Patrick Racing to set up his own team. Here's what he had to say about leaving Patrick Racing and quite a successful partnership there.
Well, I'm also very excited, but, you know, I have to thank Mr. Patrick. He's been tremendous for myself, for my career. He gave me the best opportunity. My crew, my guys, they gave me the best opportunity to win six races through these 3 years. And hopefully we will be able to finish it out today. And next year, you know, it's a near thank you, but I'm very proud of it. And, you know, it's looking good. I'm very excited about the future.
And quite importantly for the Mexican is the fact that next year's championship starts off with a race in Mexico, so he'll be kicking off his new team on home ground.
I know, it's going to be exciting. Monterrey, March 11th.
Now, Adrian Fernandez ended up second in the championship, not being able to finish in front of Gilles Deferrin, and here's how he tells us about his weekend.
Yeah, one step short, very frustrating in a way, because I didn't have the chance to really fight with Gilles and with the other guys. I mean, not just with Gilles, but with a lot of guys, and that was very frustrating. I mean, we made a lot of changes, drastic changes, to try to kill the push and things like that, and we have a major problem in the middle of the race, and it was just frustrating. I had to hang on there. I tried to make some fast when I could, but then I just couldn't hold it, so it was a little disappointed, but I'm still very clear about second place in the championship.
And the other $1 million prize that was on offer last weekend was, of course, the Kart ZX World Champion for the year 2000, Gilles Deferrin. And here's what he's had to say about his victory.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and I feel I've been doing this all my life, so it's a really important day for me. This team is fantastic. They have everything that I hope for, and even more. You know, we always hope to be successful together, but obviously achieving a championship this early is something fantastic.
And it was quite a fascinating race. Unfortunately, not for great wheel-to-wheel combat amongst the leaders. It was really a race of attrition and seeing whose car could last the 500 miles. With big, big money on offer for the victors, it was also world record speeds. That's right, world record, not just kart records for qualifying. It was the fastest times, fastest speeds ever on a closed circuit. Really had to go out to a salt lake with a land speed record car to really do anything better when they're qualifying around 400 kilometres per hour. That really is quite scary stuff, and it makes for fascinating racing. And of course, a lot of strain on the cars. That's why we only had five people make it to the checkered flag.
Yes, and of course, Phil Brannigan joins us now. Phil is also will be an interesting report coming from Phil Morris for next weekend's or for next week's motorsport news, because it has been quite an interesting championship. As Peter Merton said at the beginning of that report, the championship that nobody wanted to win.
Well, plenty of people wanted to win races, Craig. There was 11 different race winners through the season. I can't remember that happening in any championships. That's always a good sign. And I'd like to know what Roger Penske thinks about the whole thing. He's gone from being a zero last year to having his team win the championship this year, and Gilles de Ferran having a bit of a slog after the race. And, you know, Roger's a bit of a guy's guy, isn't he? So I don't know how he feels about that.
But the other thing that was a bit scary there, and not making light of it, but it was a bit scary, was Alex Pagliani in the players' car right towards the end of the race. When he backed it into the wall there, it was sort of a little bit of deja vu.
Absolutely, yeah. I knew you were going to say deja vu then, but yeah, it was a little bit of deja vu for Tag and on the coming end of the series, and also some big shots in the Indy Lights Championship. One South American driver going across the line at about 150 miles an hour with his car broken in two.
Well, it is interesting when you speak to some of the drivers, and I'm literally, I was speaking to NASCAR drivers, but next week on the show we'll be hearing from Scott Pruitt, who has had the luxury of driving in both the NASCAR and Champ cars, and hearing what they have to say about the different tracks, and about, particularly we were hearing about Talladega, because that's where we were at, and how much they fear Talladega and even Daytona are dinosaurs in so far as they don't need the hard banks to make the cars go really fast these days.
And they're starting to find that out of places like Texas, where they have 24 degree banking at a mile and a half track, and the cars are doing 235 miles an hour. Super speedways are great, they're very impressive, the numbers are always good, but yeah, the miles and the miles and a half now are where they're starting to have the problems.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Tony Raines, who broke his, or separated his shoulder blade at Rockingham, said, hey, if I can do that in a crash at Rockingham, imagine what I do to myself when I hit the wall the same way at a faster track. And a lot of the drivers would prefer to see them running on 3/4 mile, but as Tony said to me, it seems that promoters want to build 1.5 mile because that's how many spectators they can fill.
And the bigger the racetrack, as you all know, the longer the back straight, the more corporate suites you can put in, the more room there is in the paddock for merchandising, so that's one of the things that's starting to drive motor racing. That's why
three seasons
so popular in the 80s and Formula 1, because Bernie could control the ads.
Let's talk about merchandising, because Friday it became official, negotiations between Co-Grounds or Co-Grounds Management and HRC has officially broken down. And because I've been away for so long, I had my second motorsport news waiting for me when I returned. Out of the, I think, 5 editions, the one that I didn't read before I left, the 3 that came in between where I was away, and the one that I picked up off you last weekend, 4 of those covers were Co-Grounds driven.
Yeah, and the last one said he's paying HRT.
I wasn't going to mention that.
No, I'll bet you to the punch. Yeah, we've been talking very closely with Craig and his advisors and the people involved all the way through. Before we ran that cover, we spoke to a number of people in the teams to which he was talking, and that's why Craig's been very upfront about wanting to stay with the team, but obviously whatever's happened between he and HRT is now irrevocable.
Stone Brothers, watch out.
Stone Brothers, watch out. Maybe not. Don't be certain. We will certainly be on our bikes pedaling for as hard as we can on Monday and Tuesday, trying to find out exactly what's happened. We don't expect Craig or Natalie, his wife, who's also, of course, very closely involved in the negotiation, to actually say what has happened. But we do expect this saga going to drag on for a little bit longer. There are a number of players in the equation now who are not direct to the co-regulars. And the sticking points, as I understand them, are still similar. There's still the contract to be sorted out with CWR, and there is still merchandising, marketing, and so on to be sorted out with Craig Lowndes for the 2001 season. So there's a little bit left to run in this saga, but we know he's not driving for HRT, and doesn't that make that test interesting?
It does, and what about Craig Lowndes? Would he have the finance? Because you think someone like him would have the resources to start Craig Lowndes Inc. and Craig Lowndes Racing Team. Or is it a case there's no franchise to buy?
That's true, there isn't a franchise to buy at the moment. If someone said to me about 3 months ago, I think it was in your part of the world in Canberra, that the current cost of a 2-car franchise is about $2.5 million. As I understand the finances, if you have a 2-car level 1 franchise, you're about $280,000 a year better off than having a 2-car level 3 franchise. Performance of the car, of course, is now equal. But if Craig Lowndes was to sell $2.5 million in merchandising a year, and there's no reason to assume that he wouldn't sell at least that amount, who cares about $280,000? Really, there's nothing to stop Craig Lowndes going and starting a team. And hey, if if my lucky numbers came up in that photo last night, and I had $2 million, I'd go on some team, hi Craig, about 50-50 in the merchandising, you get $2 million back in 2 years.
Yeah, he's quite a marketable figure, and one of the things I'm sure that Craig and Matt are considering is, unlike open wheels, now it seems funny the difference between open wheels and King Cup races, but open wheel drivers can be racing in an Illinois, Mercedes, Chrysler 1 year, and in a Ford the next year, and nothing's thought about it, because it's really the body panels painted on the car that people notice changing. But King Cups, if you're a Ford or a Holden or a GM or a Pontiac or a Dodge as it is next year, and Bill Elliott moving to Dodge, it's going to lose him as many fans as Damien fans.
Well, that's right, and it's something that's particularly Australian, isn't it? I mean, you go to Bathurst, you go to Sandown, you go to any of the supercar rounds, and you see the Ford fans and the Holden fans getting out of their cars in the car park. They might be driving a Nissan or a Toyota, but they're still Ford or Holden people.
They're a Hyundai.
Or a Hyundai, of course. In the USA, $1 million bills gone from being a Ford bloke to a Dodge bloke. Jason Plato's out here next week. He was a Renault driver last time he was in Australia racing at Bathurst. The lines here are a lot more defined, and if Craig went to Ford, I've actually stopped people at race meetings and said, what would happen if Craig went to a Holden team? I would follow Craid no matter where he went. Okay, what would happen if he went to a Ford team? If he goes to a Ford team, he's the enemy, so...
But here's the deal, we are a fickle bunch. We do pick our cars more than our drivers. And I know Peter Norton, who's with me, you are a diehard Henry man.
Well, that's right. And I was quite excited many years back when Peter Brock moved across to Ford. It didn't last long. Just similar emotions ran high at that point.
But he didn't go to Ford. He raced a Sierra. And the year before, he'd raced a BMW. The Holden fan still saw him as a Holden man. He just happened to be in a Ford.
And I guess having the mobile, thought the car was still a mobile car. But it wasn't as if, say, the Ford Credit Racing Street, which is still vacant as far as I know, you wouldn't have Craig Lowndes going from HRC to Ford Credit Racing.
That's right.
Which could happen, by the way.
That's right. Dig out your old copies of Racing Car News or something from late 80s and early 90s. Have a look at Brock Sierra. Count the Ford badges on it.
Yeah, it had none of them?
Very few.
Yeah, but one thing I did love, and I know our drag racing fans who are hard done by here in the ACT to say the absolute least, but I did enjoy what Troy Critchley had to say, and now I've read four magazines in 1 or 2 weeks, I might have got it wrong, but the first line, I'm running for a great drive, I'm getting everything paid for, why do I want to start my own team, was just amazing. Because everyone wants a paid job, and here a man is going off to do his own thing. So, doing a great job, mind you.
He is. He's doing an absolutely fantastic job. And if you think there's something great about what Christian said, doing a great job in the USA and going his own way, this week's drag racing feature is about John Force. Talk about doing things your own way.
Yes, and 91 last weekend was his number of victories.
Yeah, he is amazing. And some of the things, we have got a massive interview. John Asher in the USA sat down with Force at the end of winning his 10th funny car title. And some of the things Force has said, we've cut out of the interview because it's too controversial, even to his own sponsors. So there's no one like John Force. He's an American superhero.
Yeah, he's indeed. And whilst you look at someone like John Force, we have our own version. We saw Victor Gray and world records again last night at Calder Park.
Fantastic. I mean, there's no stopping the guy. And look at the weight that poor car is hauling around. And I mean that in an awfully nice way, because Victor's one of the best guys in the sport. He and Marie put so much into drag racing. Of course, Geraldo McDuck was out there at Calder, and we'll have all the news from Calder this weekend. But slammers, there's nothing like it, is there?
No, there isn't. And I can't wait for Canberra to get something settled again, and it's looking less and less likely, as are any motorsport venue. And I was driving past Peter Norton today, this better than probably our interstate listeners, but Peter Norton, I was driving past Narrabundah today, and just thought, it didn't start with Fraser Park falling over, or the drag racing strip falling over, or even the short circuit motorbikes falling over. It was the little mini bike track at Narrabundah, where motorsport had its first fall.
Yes, that's right. The planning people in Canberra, and now that the government itself was being a little bit cynical about their finances, Now the Valley of Canberra is in drought as well, so that really is of concern. It's interesting that last week we spoke to Adrian Durack, who was speaking to him as a casual observer, a knowledgeable observer. He's now part of the team trying to rescue the valley and secure sponsorship dollars so it can go ahead in the future. And I guess, Phil, you may be aware of this, but in this day and age of government-run notice board events, of course, the rally, which was held by the Brindaberra Motorsport Club for so many years, is now the government holds the licensing and registration for that now. But over in the US Grand Prix, Tony George and the Holman George family paid for the entire event. Not one cent was spent by the people of Indiana, or the people of Indianapolis, or more correctly, Speedway Indiana, to put on the event. Wouldn't the people in Melbourne fall over backwards if they thought they had to do it without any government money?
It would be nice, wouldn't it? But then again, Tony George is in the invidious position of having maybe 15% of his annual revenue provided by IMF. The Holman George family, of course, are very strong in business real estate development and own, I believe, three states distribution rights for Coca-Cola. So, yeah, there's not lots of money, let's face it. But having said that, Tony George did a very good job with the US Grand Prix. Bernie loves him. They're a couple now, and I think that the US Grand Prix will go from strength to strength.
Joe Sayed did put it very nicely in his column. Have we got much from Joe on the silly season in F1?
The silly season's just about all sucked out. I think we're just about there. The only thing we're waiting for at the moment is there's a little flare. Yeah, you know when I elect a new pope and I let out the white smoke? We've got a guy outside Venetime's headquarters in England waiting for the white smoke to come out of the chimney because we really think that Fizzy's in a world of hurt at the moment. And the reason being that there's a history between him and Flame, which we'll go into this week, of course. But wouldn't surprise me if a man who lives not too far away from you might end up with some sort of drive. But Fizzy is definitely on the out of Venetime, and that's really the last bit of the silly season apart from Boston and Minardi and a bunch of teams no one cares about.
And, well, Supernova's boss coming out during the week giving the thumbs up to Mark Webber. Of course, that's David Sears, who is looking to replace someone in Formula 3000. And it seems like Mark could be in the box seat for that move.
Well, a little bit premature. Mark went to the bus line to test last week. We're waiting for results over the web. We understand that Buddy Rice tested for Supernova and that Chip Ganassi arranged that. So there is a definite move now to use the European system to blood an American driver with the view of getting him into Grand Prix racing, not so much as Champ Car and IndyCar racing, because, of course, Champ Car racing is now full of Brazilians and French people.
Yeah, but I was about to say that's the Brazilian championship, isn't it, the car series. What about this Formula 3 champion out of Germany who took out the prize at Hockenheim? And I think it's Giorgio Pantano?
Pantano, yeah, guy with a long history of success in kart racing, has done about 12 days testing for Benetton this season. Don't expect him to see him in Formula 1 anytime soon. He's obviously good in the Formula 3 car, and he needs to go and do some stuff in Formula 3000, but not quite ready for F1. And isn't it interesting, we've gone from the Wesley Young guys when Button arrived at the title at this time last year, and suddenly it was go young, go young, go young, go young. Look at the test drivers now. Words, Wandel, Herbert's being talked about as a test driver. Sort of, with a lot of experience in Grand Prix and
Champ
Car racing.
So perhaps putting younger people in the seat.
Well, anything they can do to support old people, I'm behind.
Yeah, that's why the piece we're going to use from Jason Plato, he was saying how he's got a hard under race NASCAR because cheap houses millions of dollars and you can race forever.
Yeah. Well, he can come here too. Our houses are even cheaper, Jason.
Yeah, particularly with you, if you got a contract in US dollars or British pounds.
So they're looking for a high profile on this part of the world, or should I say a wide profile?
I'm looking forward to Le Mans next year. Bentley's back. My favourite car of all is going back to Le Mans.
Why is it your favourite car?
I have always loved Bentley because they were born out of racing. They were born from a man's passion of racing. And Mr. Bentley, you know, just loved racing, so he built a car.
Yeah, but the last time I saw something as big as a Bentley, it had the Nimitz written on it, so... it is going to be interesting, of course, Volkswagen now owns Bentley, so it's going to have the same sort of engine as an Audi, so...
Yeah, but have a bit of battle on it on the top.
That's right, but you can have one engine with four different makes. You can have Bugatti back at Le Mans if you want to.
Yes, wouldn't that be great? Nice blue cars.
Yeah, but do you want to have a Bugatti beaten by a Volkswagen? I don't know.
Yes, well, it can happen. But notice that news, as we said, is out at the end of the week. You probably still haven't finished reading why Craig's staying with HRC and all the other articles that are in there, but finish it off. Because Thursday, Friday in Canberra, Thursday nationally, Friday in Canberra, you can get the latest copy of Motorsport News.
Yeah, with John Force and David Coulthard and Mick Dorn and a bunch of other people who have never won anything.
All right, then. Phil Van Ian, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you once again. Of course, the television power, the Poker Championship starts next weekend, and that's going to be interesting to see how that all gets packaged up from a very exciting week. At Wakefield Park, and I should ask your impressions of Wakefield Park before we leave.
What a great track. Terrific access, very good facilities. The people have got their hearts in the right places. They want to build a media centre there before the Lights Championship go there. Easy access from your part of the world, and I'm going to miss that because I'm going to be at Melbourne after the next round of the Super Tours, but I think that Wakefield Park is the best kept secret of motor racing, to be honest.
I can't wait for them to build the grandstand behind the brand new pit lane. Because once you've got that, you've just got that, what I've been calling a little Indy sphere, where you can sit behind the pit, watch the pit lane action, but unlike Indy, you can see the whole track from there.
Yeah, it'll be great. It's something I'm looking forward to getting back there next year, so it's a good circuit.
So then again, it's a pleasure as always, and Motorsport News is on sale now, and particularly the new issue coming out next Thursday. Thanks for your time.
See you at the races.
Yes. Well, it is a great untapped resource right to the park, and we're looking forward to that.
Yes, that's right. Unfortunately, I haven't been up there. I was scheduled to pop up and have a look at the Ferrari Owners Club. They had a national event.
They don't advertise their events.
No, that's right. Some of their the concourse, for example, was being held in public, but it was not open to the public, that's for sure. The Friday day was quite interesting. They went up there with their very expensive toys on a rather wet and miserable day a few weeks back, and quite frankly, no one stuck it into the wall or did any big damage. The local members of the Friday Owners Club can be very proud of the event that they put on. It was
some fantastic looking cars, and Phantom Horse bringing out all but the Formula One car, which is held up in customs.
Yes, fantastic cars there. The Le Mans, the F40 Le Mans car, that was just fantastic as well. All that money wrapped up in that type of equipment, it's just kind of drill over, isn't it?
Well, one man who's going to be doing a little bit of drilling next weekend is Tom Marinelli, as you enjoy the Rally Australia action from the sidelines, and that event. A very interesting one, and speaking to some of the people out at the base workshop, a very important one in the championship. Neil's starting about car 20, and in front of him, Group A factory cars, bringing all three from every team, because the championship is just that tight.
It certainly is there, Craig. Nice to be with you, and we're all looking very, very forward to Rally Australia, and as you say, I think Neil Bates and his crew, they've got it together, they know what they need to do, and it is that very tight. The factory car's just directly in front of them, as you so correctly say, but we've seen in many years gone by, too, the great performances by a number of Australian drivers in the past in Rally Australia, so I don't see why this one shouldn't be any different.
Now, last night you were getting warmed up for Rally Australia by watching the drags out at Calder Park. World record at the track for Victor Bray. And we have already spoken about that, but perhaps we could talk about some of the battles. Fred Stevens, one of the great stories with the top door slammers and top bike climbers.
Yeah, pretty incredible effort, Dad. Brett Stevens is just extraordinary. And it's the first time in 24 years that a driver has been able to win two bracket finals at the one event. And he was literally getting out of his leathers from the top bike final, from having won that, straight into his race suit with a drag with the top door slammer, of course, and then going ahead and winning that. An incredible battle, and he did not have it easy. In the qualifying rounds, you wouldn't have thought that he was going to make it through, but the team regrouped, worked very, very hard. And there were very few teams that do it as well as what his crew really do. They're just exceptionally talented, and even at the Winter Nationals, they put together a great run, and the Jack Daniels backing of the team is just extraordinary, the way that they market the whole thing. And Victor Bray, no one taking anything away from him, new world record, that 237 miles per hour. I know you've spoken about it before, but it's just extraordinary to see the amount of performance that Australian drag racing competitors are getting compared to their much, much higher funded American counterparts.
And for this first race at Calder Park, how was the crowd? Because Calder has been having some real weather issues last season, of course, just problems in general with the oval track, which is a different sort of official altogether. But how was the crowd there?
Okay, we have a thing here in Melbourne happening at the moment called the Spring Racing Carnival this very weekend and right through to Tuesday, so that took a lot of people away. It is a long weekend as well, so a lot of people out and about. It didn't rain at all. The only rain was very early in the morning at about 8 o'clock, well before the drag racing actually got started, and there would have been around about, I'd say, between 5,000 and 6,000 people, which is not an incredible number for a Calder Park drag meeting, but certainly given the circumstances of the weekend, the recent wildly fluctuating weather, and the general number of events on in Melbourne at that time, I think it wasn't too bad at all.
Good news there, and for people who are going, gee, I know that voice, congratulations, Paul, and all your cohorts at the CBS Bathurst team, once again winning another Motorsport Radio Award for your coverage of the Bob Jane event last year, which, of course, was certainly a water, well, it was almost a power boating exercise.
It certainly was. When there wasn't fog that thick that we couldn't see anything, it was absolutely rained out. It was just one thing after the other, but we managed to string it all through, and I thank you very, very much for that. And it was quite a surprise to get a Ray Ward for it, and I look forward to the next one. I believe we can do a better job again.
Hopefully it's a bit drier for you over in Perth, where we'll be looking forward to catching up with you next weekend.
Thank you.
Paul Marinelli joining us from, as he's making his way from Crater Park to Rally Australia, and congratulations to the TBS crew, which Marinelli Motorsports is a part of, getting that award there. At the Toker race, can you believe that? They're winning awards over the Super 2, over the V8 Super Pool.
Yeah, those guys really get around, don't they? And that's the type of work you need to put in to win an award like that, so you're well done to them.
Alright, then now, I need you to say something before we go into this next piece, but looking at the season so far, Supercars, which of course you've only seen half of, was that?
My good friend Paul, he sent me the tapes of each round. He mailed them over to Canada, so I did keep in touch with what was happening. I only missed one or two there, so, yeah.
With the releasing this week of all the aero packages and that sort of thing, what you're feeling?
I'm looking forward to the V8 supercars evolving into something a bit more like NASCAR, where the competitiveness of all the different manufacturers is almost guaranteed. They really do standardise a lot of the components, standardise some of the aerodynamic aids, and of course the V8 supercars are a little bit different because it does start with an original body shell, so certain manufacturers will, because of the shape of the road car, have an advantage. Just because of the shape of the road car, yeah. And
what about the lights in the Konica International, the Konica V8 Light Series, which is no longer V8 Light?
You've written down Indy Lights.
Yeah, I know, you've got a link to that.
Okay. Yes, well, next year, what was the Konica V8 Lights, losing the light name, they saw that as a marketing mistake, sort of looking at assay derogatory term that these things are only like light beer, half strength or something like that, because really they're not. They are the full V8 supercar. It just happens to be last year's model, and these people have to compete on the open market for the same engines, gearboxes and things like that. So the resources these guys are putting in for the secondary category is really quite remarkable.
The one car to look out for in that at Bathurst is the Chico Roll entry of McLeod and Wakefield. A whole new Chico Roll campaign featuring Sarah Jane is going to be part of the Bathurst Charge, and an interesting sponsorship, and marketing, the Chico Roll marketing is right around the Bathurst race.
This could be interesting, couldn't it? I can just see a fiberglass model of a Chico Roll attached to the roof of the car or something like that. I'm a little bit cynical about marketing pushes using Bathurst. Go back many years to the release of the movie Ghostbusters. Little AX7 made a whole lot of fuss about their sponsorship. They finished nowhere.
In the Dayton Indy Lights, Scott Dixon won the race at the California Speedway, beating Townsend Bell by 0.018 of a second, and clinched the Dayton Indy Lights Championship for 2000. The race was a high-speed drafting duel which would stand up as the best NASCAR could offer. The entire field separated by only 2 seconds or less for most of the race, and it finished with the first 14 cars separated by only 2.173 seconds. Well, also last weekend, the USAC Silver Crown Series wrapped up, and Brian Pilot took the lead and held off the series champion Tracy Hines and Russ Gainster for victory in the Memphis 100 at the Coors Silver Bullet Series Final at the Memphis Motorsport Park, which of course was a pretty tight affair.
Also at Memphis last Sunday, Jeff Green started the party, which Kevin Harvick had crashed by winning the NASCAR Busch Grand National Sandown 250 race there, third for the season, and it came over, it was Kevin Harvick's third victory for the season, which came over Elton Sawyer. Harvick tied the NASCAR Busch Series rookie record of 3 victories in a season, which was set back in 97 by Steve Parker, current Winston Cup driver. Harvick averaged a 92.352 miles an hour, and it was a great victory. Jeff Green, Randy LaJoy and Tim Fedor rounded out the top 5 finishes. But Jeff Green, with his finish in 3rd place, has seen him wrap up the championship. And after the race, he spoke to the media and was, as you would expect, extremely happy.
So, Jenny, I'm glad that it's over the championship. We've still got 2 races to go. We've got to win them. But time's a little short today. Just drove my guts out there at the end. Kevin might have had a little bit better car. He had track position on us anyway. And we were so even that just wore my tires out there at the end and just drove my guts out today to try to win this. Try to put the icing on the cake, before you say, and just been a great year for Nesquik and everybody involved with our race car, Coffee Mate and Tow House and everybody on our car. It's just been a great year for them and Jeff Green, man. It's just been an awesome season for me. So I get to showcase my talent a little bit, and Harold and the guys. Harold does a great job on tuning this race car, Chevrolet, to make it perform like it does. And we just, you know, was a little bit off just a little bit there at the end of the race to beat Kevin. But, man, when we go to the racetrack, I know we have an opportunity to win no matter where we're at, Glenn. And when you have that opportunity, that's good for a driver. And anytime you can sit in a seat like that, I'm just the blessed one to be sitting in the seat. I mean, a lot of guys could do the same job I'm doing, but I'm very blessed. And good Lord looks after me and my career. Good Lord looks after everybody today. Gave us a great, safe day.
The man who is acknowledged by everyone involved in motorsport in America as the godfather of racing. In fact, every publication in America takes its lead from National Speed Sport News. Chris Konomaki is considered the most influential man in motorsport in America, and I had an opportunity to catch up with him whilst on our 6-week tour of America, and I started by asking him about the plight of road racing in the United States.
The problem with road racing is now that road racing is professional and money is paid, big money, it's changed. And the reason that is when road racing began in this country years ago, it was an amateur sport. It was very inexpensive to put on. People would come and buy a low price ticket and walk around a big area. And they'd walk to turn one and watch for a while, and then they'd walk a quarter mile or half a mile over to another turn, which is of a different character, and watch there for a while. Then they'd walk someplace else. And their car was there, and their picnic lunch, and their beer was in the tailgate, they'd meet friends, and that was all fine. And then when road racing became professional, and the promoters had to pay prize money, they realized that they couldn't charge these people a lot of money to walk around. So they forced them into grandstands where they could get a lot of money for a seat. And then you're in the grandstand, all you see is a car whiz by and then disappear. And the appeal of road racing diminished. So that's why road racing is not popular in this country anymore. It was more popular when you could walk around. But you can't do that because it wasn't the financial benefits to the promoter who won't support the event. So they make the people sit down in expensive seats, and all they see is a car whiz by and go away.
But of course, road racing is getting stronger in historic racing.
Vintage racing. But you see, that's been a regression to the old way. There's no prize money in vintage races, so they don't force the people into the grandstand, and they walk around and enjoy themselves.
Chris, the Formula One race, how did you see the return of these cars to the United States as a success or as a failure?
Commercial success, yes. Artistic success, no. It's a matter of taste on the part of the paying customer. You know, the paying customer wants passing, and the Formula One customer wants style, and panache, and the class, and form, not necessarily passing. you have to understand that if you're a Formula One fan, to be able to see up close Michael Schumacher pass Mika Hakkinen for the lead, which they saw, is enough to satisfy somebody. Now, that would satisfy a Formula One fan, but it wouldn't satisfy an IndyCar fan or a stock company, because they want more. They demand and insist upon more. Yeah.
Could the event in future be more an international event with international interest than really local interest?
I don't know how many Europeans and Asians and Australians were at Formula One race. They said it was about 25,000, which would be a little over 10% of the audience came from overseas. I have a belief that there are certain people in our country who are who want to go to the Masters golf tournament at least once. They want to go to the World Series baseball game at least once. They want to go to the Super Bowl football game at least once. And they want to see a Formula One race at least once. So I don't think the crowd for the Indianapolis Formula One race next year will be as big as it was this year. I think the race will continue to grow, but because unless there's all of a sudden an epidemic of passing. And if there's an epidemic of passing, then you get the people back, yeah.
National Speed Sport News, Chris, has been the publication of the United States for such a long time now, probably for longer than I have even been alive.
First issue in its present form was in August of 1934. I sold that issue as a newsboy. So I've been riding with it ever since it began. Yeah.
How has National Speed Sport News changed over those years?
Well, it's changed a lot, but for example, the advent of television and the internet and so forth, people used to buy National Speed Sport News years ago to find out who won. Now they know Sunday night who won with radio and television and everything, and we have to give them more. So what we've done now is to reduce the length of our race reports, you know, from the start to the green flag to the checkered flag, and gone more with the sideline stuff about what happens in the pits, what's going on, and the driver and his family's off hours, things that you can't get on television and on the internet.
Chris Economaki there, and next week we'll be hearing more from the great man in regards to why Americans like oval track racing and a whole bunch more.
Rusty Wallace has claimed his ninth Bud Pole Award for this weekend's Phoenix NASCAR Winston Cup race, and of course getting very close to the Atlanta wrap-up for that championship, which it looks like Bobby Labonte will come through with the goods. Going across the pond now, and well, what an interesting couple of races we have seen in the American Le Mans series. It was, well, Britain's Alan McNish who took a firm grip on the American Le Mans series with one race to go in Adelaide with a second place at Las Vegas on Sunday. The Audi driver's points total now is beyond the reach of any of his rivals, despite a victory for his teammates and the Le Mans 24-hour winners, Frank Beeler and Emanuele Pirro at the Nevada Circuit.
Feels very, very good. We've worked very hard all year to achieve this, and it's nice that Audi have wrapped up the drivers and also the manufacturer's title. So it's been a lot more difficult than that, that's for sure, and I think the race today showed how difficult it was, because there was a fight right from the start to the finish. But that's the way racing should be.
His only regret is that the season-long American Le Mans Series teammate Ronaldo Capello was unable to share in his triumph thanks to an unusual scoring system which is used by the American Le Mans Series organisers, and they are refusing to declare McNish's championship even though he can't be overhauled in the points by either Beeler or Pirro or long-time championship leader Bjorn Mueller and J.J. Leto in the BMW Schnitzer team. It is argued that should McNish not race at the Australian finale on the 31st of December, or Audi switches its driver pairings, Capello could take the title. Well, Bula and Pirro lucked into their third victory of the race season, and the top three cars were all involved in a major shunt on the 82nd of 129 laps. So the top five in points in the prototype class: Alan McNish with 264 points, Ronaldo Caffarello with 253, Emanuele Pirro with 36, Pink Beeler with 235, and Royal and Mueller with 233. And whilst we're talking about American Le Mans, it seems that Donington Park in the UK leads the contenders for a round in next season's American and European Le Mans Series calendars. And the president of the Panos Motorsport Group, Scott Atherton, admits that negotiations with Donington were ongoing, but he refused to reveal whether he'd take a second track in the frame, or we'll talk about the second track in the frame, whether it was Silverstone or Brands Hatch. Now, the former one hosted the two European Le Mans races, pilot races this year, and was penciled in for around in July 2001, prior to the British Grand Prix returning to its traditional date. Brands, which last hosted a sports car race in 96, without being an international one anyway, is also known to have expressed interest in running a round of that event. And we're going on to touring car racing overseas. Peugeot has announced it will be running in the 2001 British Touring Car Championship with a 406 coupe. The race next year has, well, been, or the racing next year by Peugeot has pulled off a bit of a coup with the announcement, because everyone is expecting and widely tipped the new 307 to be the car of choice. Whilst Vauxhall has confirmed its 2001 BTCC program, a pair of Astra coupes for the current works drivers, Jason Plato and Ivan Moore, who will be in Australia very soon running in the second HRT car, the expected announcement comes after weeks of talk from Vauxhall's motorsport manager, Mike Nichols, expressing the Luton's Mark's intention to build up six Astras and to run two as a works team. Vauxhall's commitment to the series was officially announced on the Motorsport Day, which was Friday last week, of the British Motor Show at the Birmingham NEC, where we had a chance to speak to Jason Plato about next season.
There is starting to develop now. I mean, as you know, as with everything, when the formula changes, people kind of stand back to wait and see how it's going to develop. And the motor trade in Europe, and in particular in Great Britain, isn't at its strongest at the moment. So, you know, everyone's mindful of the fact that, you know, the manufacturers don't want to invest too much money in motorsport. And this is what the new regulations have tried to achieve. We've tried to make it more accessible, bring the cost down. I mean, to give you an idea, budgets this year are estimated at, or budgets for the 2006 season are estimated in Australian dollars being $20 million. That's far too much. Next year, I reckon the budget's going to be somewhere in the region of $5 or $6 Australian dollars. So, you know, our main priority was to cut the cost, and yet still make the cars exciting to drive and also to watch. So, you know, so certainly at the motor show, we're the first ones with our foot in the water at Vauxhall. Ford look like they're going to follow suit, and Peugeot announced a couple of weeks ago that they're on board, and there's all sorts of rumours that other manufacturers are going to come and play. And I think, you know, race 1 2001, then they'll be there very shortly afterwards when they realise what a great show we've got.
Perfect, like to have such a large event taking place, and to being able to see so many fans and people to come up to you.
Oh, it's great. I mean, it's one of the events I've been going to for years here, you know, the last two years with Vauxhall, and before that with Renault, and it's, you know, it's a great buzz, and, you know, we kind of all can get blasé at times, but, you know, we take it all for granted, but when you come to one of these events, you just realise, you know, how popular British touring cars have been over the last few years. And it's good to see all the fans and the supporters kind of come out to say hello, want to come and get an autograph and buy a cap and all the rest of it. So it's, yeah, it's a nice way for us. It is our job and it is work, but you know, it's an enjoyable thing to do. It's good fun.
Well, Mark Webber looks to have his sights set on signing up with a Formula 3000 title contender, Supernova, for the 2001 Championship. The Australian, who finished third in the season with European Arrows, received high praise from Supernova's boss David Sears as the team looked to replace this year's championship runner, Nicholas Mazzacane, who is moving over, I think you'll find, to Ganassi Racing. And if, as expected, Webber is named as Benetton's official F1 driver in 2001, the likelihood of him signing for Supernova will increase, given that Supernova is affiliated to the Benetton Formula 1 team. it seems like that Gerhard Berger is talking about BMW to move into touring cars, and it would, well, have to be an international series for BMW to get into it. So that means that the talk for another German Team Top series going international does look to be more serious, with Donington Park again in the frame to host a round of the DTM series next summer. The Leicestershire track, which hosted four DTM and International Touring Car Championship races in the early 90s, would be one of four non-German fixtures on the 11-day calendar for 2001. Zandvoort, Zolder, Spa, the A1 ring, and the Helsinki Street Track all vying for the other slots. So the Donington management, Robert Fernow, he outlined a contract with the series organisers at Hockenheim, the final round last weekend, and is now awaiting final confirmation of the calendar. The actual race date will be governed by the Donington's plans for shutting the track down for major rebuilding work due to commence after the running of the British Motorcycle Grand Prix on July 8th. Now, what do the teams think? Well, Mercedes Sports Chief Norbert Haag and privateer Audi boss Hans-Jürgen Up have expressed enthusiasm over the races in Britain, but the Opel sports boss, Volker Streixi, warned that the cost of the event should not be carried by the manufacturers, but in fact being covered by the promoter. So there might be some friction following up. But Opel in the DTM have swept the top four places in the final race of the championship, with Yuri Alzen scoring a dominating light-to-flag victory in the second race after he had already won the first race at Hockenheim last weekend. He was followed by Opel driver Jan Winkelhock, Michael Bartels and Stefano Modena, the former Formula One driver. The first Mercedes home in fifth place was Marcel Tainan. So the championship standings for the DTM, as it was wrapped up last weekend, Bernd Schneider taking the championship with a massive 206 points, Don Manuel Reuter with 162, Klaus Ludwig with 122, Marcel Falsler with 108, and Jochen Winkelhock coming in fifth in the championship with 86 points.
And that wraps up this week's version of Inside Motorsport. Stay tuned for next week, where we have reports from Rally Australia and the second last round of the NASCAR Winston Cup Championship. A little series have wrapped up, but we've still got some exciting stuff still to come. And tune in next Sunday morning for Craig Revell doing the breakfast program. Yes, it's going to be a struggle to get Craig out of bed for a 6 o'clock start, but tune in, it should be well worth it. And coming up next is the Baseball Show.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple S FM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.